This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jones and Keefe.
Jones and Keefe on WEEI.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go wherever you go. Just download the Odyssey app.
We've got to go back to Lynn Dickey in the early 1980s for a player to have five-plus touchdown passes and complete 90% of his passes. 19 for 21, better than 90%, 256, the five touchdowns to five different receivers. And Mike Vrabel, they take their step. They will clinch the East if the Bills lose or tie the Eagles coming up next on Fox. The last team to go from a 13-loss season to a 13-win season, the 1999 Indianapolis Colts in Peyton Manning's second year. Mike Vrabel takes a 13-loss team and turns them into a 13-win team.
Tremendous game for the Patriots yesterday. 42-10 win over the Jets. Drake May doesn't even play a full three quarters. He finishes 19 of 21, 256 passing yards, five touchdowns, has a passer rating of 157, almost perfect, and the highest QBR since the stat has been created. Huge win overall for the Patriots. We're going to address that in a second. The text line, 617-779-7937, has been chiming in with their own creative solutions to how to make the NBA a more fun league for casual fans. Here's some of them. I just think they're very creative. They're very funny. How about the bottom eight teams who have the best record over the last month of the season for top draft picks? Best record of the bottom eight teams in the last month get to pick in order of their finish. Another one, this one is just kind of straightforward. Eliminate light fouls, bring in fighting. So it's hockey.
The Malice at the Palace got good ratings.
Yeah, I don't think that was great for the league.
No.
978 says Wiggy is onto something. Three should only count in the last 2 minutes of a half. I love that idea. And we have, if the NBA wants a better product, ditch the NBA Cup. No team below 500 makes the playoffs. Eliminate back-to-backs. And if you want a tournament, make a loser bracket for better lottery odds. So you treat it like tennis where there's a back draw. So if you want a high lottery pick, you got to beat out the other teams that are going for the high
then
lottery
Then you probably
pick.
Have to get rid of like protected picks in that sense. Because then it's like if you win the tournament, your pick goes to another team, but you lose the tournament, you get to keep your pick at pick five. So you'd have to get rid of protected picks there.
These people are paid a lot of money to figure out how to make
Didn't
the league
Mike
compelling.
Didn't Mike Zarin, the Celtics assistant GM, have the idea that the picks are slotted every year? So 1 year you get the first pick, the next year the second pick. So like every 30 years you get the number one pick. And it just changes every... I don't remember his exact... I think it was something like that. Like
So Zarin's no longer with the Celtics, but
oh,
he...
Oh, he's not?
No, he's not.
Oh,
but...
Wow.
Or no, I'm sorry. I was thinking of somebody else. I was thinking of Austin Ainge. Zarin is still with the Celtics.
Yeah, because I thought it was his idea. That it was like, again, like let's say 2025, you have the number one pick. So next year you have 2, 3, 4, 5. And it's like, but then, you know, 20 years from now, you're going to have pick 21, 22, 23. So no matter what you do, you know what your draft pick is. And I think you can still trade them and stuff, but you know what your pick is.
Yeah, I think, again, this is for people who's... pay grade is much higher than ours.
They could pay us more and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, sure.
That works for
me. Yeah, for the right price.
I just think the biggest thing to be, get rid of back-to-backs. And I say the same thing in the NHL. Get rid of all back-to-backs and you'll have a better product.
I just don't think it's going to happen because they can cram as many games as they want to into a season and then make the most money off of that.
And you're probably right.
And
that's why they won't get rid of the NBA Cup either.
That's what it comes down to. It's a money game. But with the NFL... they want to add an 18th game to the schedule.
By the way,
if you didn't like some of the games yesterday or some of the games on Christmas, you might be questioning if anybody really wants an 18th game besides the owners and the league.
Yesterday should have been the end of the regular season.
Yeah, it did kind of
so
feel that way.
Stupid.
I will say there's a ton at stake in week 18, so at least you have that to look forward to.
You're not wrong, but there was also that could have just been this past weekend. And you know what the Patriots extra game was, Mego? That 17th game? It was that very compelling Monday night game against the Giants. That was the quote unquote extra game on their schedule this year. Like, is that really necessary?
You didn't like that game? You didn't enjoy the product?
Oh, I enjoyed it, but is that really necessary?
Probably not, but you could argue that about a lot of the games on the Patriots schedule. It's been an extremely
nice
friendly schedule to them. Well, I'll say this. My takeaway from yesterday's absolute beatdown in MetLife was that this is what Vrabel promised back in January.
Yeah.
I take kind of a big picture look at it, which is that if you remember, Mike Vrabel was introduced on January 13th of this year, just a week after Gerard Mayo was fired, and they've blown the number one pick. It looks like they are at the absolute lowest of low. And not only did Mike Vrabel famously come in and say, this is a team that's going to take advantage of bad football. And you're like, okay, yeah, we've been hearing that for years. Sure, that's like the bare minimum. You should be less stupid than the other team. That's kind of how it is. You're like, okay, good. So the other team will be stupid and maybe you won't be as talented, but you can take advantage of that. I've heard that for two decades. But when I went back and revisited it, he was very specific about his goals. And whether you thought those goals would happen this year, I mean, maybe you're an extremely optimistic person. Our friend Taylor Kyles was one of those people, and he got made fun of a lot in the moment. Turns out he was very right. Here's what Mike Vrabel said back on January 13th.
Well, we have to improve. I mean, I think that's the goal. Our expectations aren't going to change. It's going to be to win the division. It's going to be to host home playoff games, and it's going to be to compete for championships. So we're never going to put a timetable or any sort of prediction on when that may happen, but it has to happen, and it's going to start April 7th when our guys come in, and we're going to build a program. We're going to have a foundation. We're going to give them something to believe in and to be proud of, and hopefully they're able to hold each other accountable and to that standard, and if not, then my job's to protect the football team.
So, again, I just think, like, in the moment, it's hard to remember how inconceivable it seemed that team was going to clinch the division. When you have the Buffalo Bills with Josh Allen there, and they're Super Bowl contenders year after year at this point, you're thinking, you're going to have to go through Josh Allen for, like, four more years at least, if not longer. And it's been a strange NFL season, and you've been lucky, and your schedule has been easy. But you just hear that, and it's a roadmap to exactly where they are today. Hosting playoff games, winning the division. Who would have thought it would have happened in a year?
When he talked about winning the AFC East and those goals, I was thinking 2026. I was like, okay, get a year, get things settled, top five pick. Because I thought, hey, it's going to take two off seasons of roster building to get this team to challenge, not even win, but challenge for the division. And instead, not only do you win the AFC East, you clinch it a week early. It's not even like it came down to the last week. You clinch it a week early. So it's, I think, a huge credit to the program he built, the draft they had as well, the free agency they've had, the coaching staff too. Quite a few guys here. Now, there were some Vrabel guys on this staff, but there were also guys, McDaniels, Thomas Brown, Todd Downing. Like, those guys hadn't all worked together yet. And after a shaky first week against the Raiders, it's been really good. Since then, I mean, the turnovers against Pittsburgh were bad, but the offensive operation, it's been really good. And then Zach Kaur, who all of a sudden, hey, week two, you're the defensive coordinator now because our defensive coordinator has a serious illness. He stepped, and I know the defense has been slow to adjust at times. They've had some inconsistent moments. They've still been, what, top 10, top 11 in most metrics for the guy who took over in week two. So I think it's a ton of credit to all these new guys, coaching staff and on the roster, that they've brought in and that have contributed right. Like, Will Campbell didn't take a year to contribute. Jared Wilson didn't take a year to contribute. These guys all contribute. Craig Woodson, even a guy we don't talk about a lot, starting safety all year, contributed right away.
We do have some sound from Albert Breer that I'm interested in playing, if you can get that ready, Jackson, because he was on NBC Sports Boston on their pregame show yesterday, and he discussed what he's been hearing about the Patriots front office. We focused a lot on the coaching staff. We focused a lot on the roster, but the roster builders were in a tough position going into this year. Everybody was like, you're firing Mayo and you're keeping Elliott. How? Like, how? Look how bad the roster has been. But all indications are that those two have worked well together. This is a long clip from Albert Breer, but it has a lot of information, and I think it raises some questions about whether what the Patriots have done this year is going to be sustainable in terms of continuing to build out their program, continuing to build out support around Drake May.
Do you expect Wolf and Calvin to both be back next year?
I think that that's a likelihood, yeah, that they will both be back. And I think the Elliott Wolf thing, at least to me, like what Tom's poll shows you is the divide in the way that maybe he's perceived here locally, with, you know, versus like how he's looked at inside the league in other front offices. And I would say this, like from everything I can gather, the relationship between Mike Vrabel and Elliott Wolf worked from the start. And this was really in large part because Mike Vrabel reached out to the scouting department early on and sat in on meetings. And his early start with that stuff led to some of the biggest acquisitions they had. But there were other guys that they've hit on that have been big time, that have been big time players for the team, where the coaching and scouting operations came together. One's Kyrus Tonga. He's somebody who hadn't played a ton of football, even though he'd been in the league for a while. But his tape showed a strong, square player who played hard. The coaches liked him more in the Vrabel scheme than what he was doing in Arizona. And then they signed him the first day of free agency. This is generally the type of player that would still be available 5, 6, 7 days in a free agency, but they snapped him up right away. And then another example would be Craig Woodson, who's their fourth round pick. Now, some people are surprised that he's starting. This is somebody that both the coaches and scouts in Foxborough viewed as the guy who could be a day one starter. He's a little small for the position, but they looked at his tape and they couldn't find a weakness. They were aligned very early on. Now, as for Ryan Cowden, like, he is not the general manager. Elliott Wolf is essentially the general manager right now. And so, like, you know, with the jobs that could be available, Miami, maybe Atlanta, like, I would think that Ryan Cowden would have an interest in pursuing a shot at becoming a general manager. His family isn't up here. You know, he's had like a kind of sideways couple of years, I'd say. And so I think the idea of becoming a general manager elsewhere would appeal to him. But this is a good operation right now, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see all three guys back in 2026.
Okay, so there's a lot there. Before we get exactly to the Cowden stuff, I think it's interesting the players that Breer highlights there. He says Kyrus Tonga and Craig Woodson, and he hails them as these big success stories that the front office has had. I think that's great. Like, those are players kind of on the margins who have had big plays and who have been important, to your point, John, but it's not really like what I want to know about the front office. The questions I have about the front office are, like, I want to know who said it's going to be Will Campbell with this pick. I want to know that.
Henderson too.
I want to know who pushed for Travion Henderson. I want to know who pushed to give Milton Williams that contract, because those are the guys who have made the huge difference. I want to know who recruited Stephon Diggs here. Was it Todd Downing because he had the previous relationship with Stephon Diggs in Minnesota? What was the breakdown between the big free agents like Diggs and Milton Williams coming here and playing for Vrabel? Like, how much of it was that? Because if you're telling me that Ryan Cowden might leave, his family's not even up here right now, so maybe this is a great experience for him, but he might be out the door and Elliott Wolf is sticking around. I want to know that you're not going to be back in the same situation you were 2 years ago, and when we couldn't point to Bill Belichick as being the problem in the front office anymore.
And you made the point that, you know, you fire Mayo, why not fire Elliott Wolf? And I remember Robert Kraft at the time said, well, it's his first full year of this grading system that we believe in. And that was a thing. And Vrabel mentioned Elliott Wolf at his press conference opening. I remember he said, Elliott will laugh, I want good ones. Like, he said that, and they were kind of already, it seemed like, joking around with each other, whatever. But point being, like, the organization has a big belief in Elliott Wolf. And I'm talking from ownership and that grading system. And what's interesting is, you look at the 2024 Patriots draft, outside of Drake May, probably the worst in the history of the team, outside of that pick. You know, 2025?
Yeah, here's a name you haven't thought about in a while. Jalen Polk.
Yeah, Javon Baker too, right? Can't remember. I mean, Caden Wallace played yesterday. I was like, oh, that's right, he is still here. But that draft, one of the worst in Patriots history, outside of May, who was a great pick. Okay, sure. But then 2025, it's very early. That has a chance to be one of the top 5 or 6 drafts in team history. Like, if Will Campbell continues to develop on the track he's been on, that left tackle for a long time, Henderson's been a dynamic player, Kyle Williams has, Jared Wilson's been a starter from day one, Craig Woodson's been, and again, it's only year one, The 2022 draft looked okay through its first year, so long way to go. But I think that's what's been really interesting to me, because this grading system that ownership on down believes in, maybe it is good, and just the first year wasn't fully implemented, because this draft and last draft, night and day.
Do you really believe that's the difference, John?
I think it's a big part of it. Not okay. Like the biggest part. I think, but also part of me, when Vrabel got hired, I kind of wondered, like, okay, how long till he stuffs Elliott Wolff in a locker and
that's
then he's like, I'm in charge?
That's what we all thought.
But and it hasn't worked out that way.
No, it's worked out really well. And that's what I'm saying. Like, what is the difference between the front office? Is it because Vrabel asserts himself to a certain extent and is also able to get these other players that he has relationships like Robert Spillane from around the league to come and play? Or is it Ryan Cowden, whatever he brought to the table? Or is it truly, like, it's not impossible that Elliott Wolff had this grading system that he really didn't get to implement before this year? I just think maybe that might be kind of unusual when it's a year of so much change and Vrabel is bringing in basically all his guys outside of Jeremy Springer, Josh McDaniels, and Elliott Wolff. And so there is a part of me when I look at Cowden has interviewed for GM jobs. Like, every year, he interviewed for Kansas City Chiefs, the Panthers, the Commanders, the Giants, the Steelers. He wants to be a general manager. And there may be some dynamic where Elliott Wolff is so highly respected around the league. Sure, we've heard that a bunch. It's clear the Crafts want him in the front office here for one reason or another. And so, if he's going to stay here, do you want him staying here and Ryan Cowden going to another front office, having that be Vrabel's guy and leaving, and then it's just Vrabel and Elliott Wolff and their respective staffs?
I bet you the Crafts want Wolff over Cowden, because I think they look at what happened. Vrabel's downfall in Tennessee was that infighting with the GM and
that's
the personnel.
That's what I'm
power.
Talking about.
And I wonder,
you don't want that to happen here.
Right, but I wonder if the Crafts look at it and if they say, hey, Elliott Wolff is the guy and that's that. Maybe that'll prevent some of that. But then if you're Vrabel,
you think Vrabel, probably want your guy.
Like
Vrabel,
if it comes
you
down
have
to,
the 13-win season, right. And you're going to be sitting here with probably a 14-win season. You're going to be sitting here and go, no, you guys are right. It was working so well before I got here.
And that's why I wonder if it comes down to it. Like, if Ryan Cowden gets offered a GM job, would Mike Vrabel go to the Crafts and say, hey, is there a way we can move on from Elliott Wolff and make Ryan Cowden our GM?
Well, that's
and
where it might get really messy.
But and then what do they say to that? Because they kept Elliott Wolff with Bill Belichick. They fired Bill Belichick and kept Wolff. They fired Gerard Mayo and kept Elliott Wolff. They hired Mike Vrabel and kept Elliott Wolff. Clearly, ownership believes strongly in Elliott Wolff. And his first offseason with the Patriots, really bad. But his second one has been really good. So it makes you wonder. Is it? And I think his grading system does.
But I feel like the difference is Vrabel and Cowden coming in.
But
here.
I think the year of his grading system, which is not a sexy topic for fans, I know, but I think that has made a draft-wise, that made a difference. But then the free agency thing, was that Robert Spillane getting convinced by Ryan Cowden to go? Was that Milton Williams saying, I want to go play for Mike
Vrabel? They could do nothing but re-sign their own free agents the year before.
And overpay.
And get Antonio Gibson.
And Chuck Sikorafor, who quit.
Right. I mean, come on. Yeah. Like, that. The difference is, to me, in my opinion, I'm not saying that the grading system can't
Vrabel's
make any
made
difference.
A massive difference.
But Vrabel and Cowden have made the difference. Yeah. You hear Breer there say he thinks everybody's happy, of course, because of the way the season's gone, the way the free agents and the draft picks have performed. Everybody's going to come back next year. Sure. But what happens if somebody plucks Ryan Cowden apart and
says,
kept
a lot of the scouts,
you
too.
You changed everything.
Like,
here.
Scouts that Bill Belichick and Elliott Wolff hired, they kept it. Like, basically, I think the Crafts sent the message that they thought all the problems were Bill Belichick, because they kept Wolff, they kept most of the scouts, and they've kept them for multiple years now. And it is, I think that's going to be an interesting topic, because if you're a team out there and you see the Patriots turnaround, wouldn't you want to hire Ryan Cowden?
Yes.
Or wouldn't you want to? I mean, because what's Elliott Wolff's title? Executive Vice President of
He's like
football?
Chief Scout.
Yeah, but
I swear
but
to
he's
God.
Got like
he's
EVP,
He's the Executive Vice President of Scouting or something.
What if the Cincinnati Bengals say, hey, we'll make Elliott Wolff President of Football Operations? Would the Crafts say, no, we'll match that? Because they've never given anyone even a GM title, let alone a President of Football. Scott Pioli was Vice President of Player Personnel, and he was winning Executive of the Year building Super Bowl teams. Like, it's going to come down to that.
Well, here's the thing. As happy as everything is right now, if the team continues to have success, they will have some kind of brain drain in one form or another. And they're going to get plucked away for bigger positions. So it's a matter of who you think should be the decision maker that stays in the building.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with all that said and done, we're going to do our own version of Grab Bag. It's going to be very Patriots heavy, very NFL heavy on the other side, but we'll get into some other stuff as well. First, here's some trending.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
A-U-D-A-C-Y. Type that into your app search, then download. Jones and Keefe.
On WEEI.
It's time for Grab Bag. It's time for Grab Bag.
I'm very nervous running this segment. We're not going to do the full bits of Grab Bag, just like we didn't do the surprise question of the week for Hunter Henry. I know the Twitch chat, twitch.tv/BostonWEEI, was very disappointed by that. But that's not fully our bit to take. Like, they have a standing relationship with Hunter Henry where they ask him wonderful questions about Destiny's Child breaking up and gauge his surprise. I can't trample on that sacred space.
And they have a wonderful relationship with Grab Bag, which we can't trample on too much either.
No, but we will use some of it. So let's get to our first topic. Of course, Christian Barmore, as we discussed a little bit earlier, was very heated coming off the field after he felt that Armand Membu, number 70, if you were watching yesterday, the rookie tackle for the Jets, he thought that he had a dirty late hit on him. I went back and watched the All 22?
Yeah,
the All 22 today. So sick brag. I was watching Coach's film. I thought that it was kind of incidental. I could see how it could be seen as dirty if it was through the whistle. At the same time, like, this is a team, the Patriots, that pride themselves on taking you up to the line. And here was Mike Vrabel on the Greg Hill Show this morning discussing how he handled that very heated situation with Barmore.
Yeah, we want to take him to the line. We take him just past the line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have to be able to do. It's a violent game. And we want to take him just to the edge of the line, and then we got to get back and play the next snap and be under control and figure out what that next situation is. So we're always working on that, and I appreciate not only Christian's efforts but everyone else's efforts to play that way. And then, you know, you have to shut it off for a few seconds, and, you know, they always end up getting a second guy, and we want to make great decisions for the team. So these are great learning messages and moments for our players, for me, for everybody to be able to say that the stakes are going to get raised and it's going to be a high pressure environment. And we have to be able to go to that line and then come off of it.
I think it's good experience going into the playoffs because there are going to be more high pressure situations.
Yep.
Emotions are going to run high. Something that was a great point that Vrabel made in there is they do always get the second guy. Like, maybe eventually they get to the instigator, but it's always the guy who's reacting to what just happened to him. That's the guy who gets heated and gets into something. Like, the instigator is, you're just like, whoa, me? No, not me. And so, yeah, even if you're the second guy, you can talk your talk, but maybe don't take it all the way back to, I'll see that guy in the locker room if he wants, which is what he told Mark Daniels of Mass Live.
And it felt like things were building to that, right? Because you had the pass, roughing the passer against Drake May where he got hit high. Then the Jets had a taunting penalty down 28-3 where they were really talking a lot of crap. Then you had Vrabel take that timeout to force the Jets to run an extra play, which was right before this. So you could kind of feel things building and the frustration building in the Jets. So I really wasn't surprised. I was actually happy that it wasn't anything worse. I thought you might get a cheap shot at some point in this game that hurt someone, and thankfully it didn't come to that.
Yeah.
Bag.
Okay, I was wondering where the grab bag portion was going to come into that, because that song is very Jackson-coded. We saw a lot of videos and pictures last night of the AFC East champs hats and T-shirts. It's where you get the name of the hat and T-shirt game. Some of them say, been there, won that. So, you know, there was a time when Patriots fans would say, we don't do AFC East championship hats and T-shirts, but I understand if you're excited and you want to go out and get one, because it's been a while. It's been since 2019.
We still don't do that.
Well,
standards are higher, Bego.
I'll ask you this. What did you make of the hats and T-shirts design? Because I have an opinion on that.
So I don't understand. And this has been a fashion trend for a few years. Like the nautical the nautical rope on hats, I don't get it.
It's like, ugly.
I don't understand the point. It started a few years ago. I don't know who came up with it and why. I wish it would go away.
Is it a golf thing? Somebody in one of my mentions was saying it was a golf thing.
I wear hats when I golf and they don't have any ropes on them. So I don't know.
But like, sick brag, bro.
I wear hats. Right. Great brag. Right. But, and golf. But I didn't like the shirts. The hats are okay. I don't like the nautical rope. I just think it's weird. But it's cool that they had a hat and T-shirt game.
Yeah.
That's kind of my take. I don't love the merch itself.
No, I wouldn't blame anyone for not running out and buying the hats. I got to say, I thought the hats were pretty brutal. Like, of course, it means something to you because you won the division. That's awesome. Of course, you're going to wear it. You're going to save it. Hopefully, you get an AFC championship hat and then maybe a Super Bowl hat. But I thought the little rope that they put on the like brim of the hat, what is that for? Like, who decided that that's a style? And I know it's not new. It's just, why does it have to be on all these athletic hats now? What's the point of it? Like, it looks silly. I don't like it. That's my take on it. You want me, I want you.
Rich Keefe. My sugar boo, I'm levitating. The Milky Way, we're renegading. Grab bag.
Shout out Twitch chat, by the way, says the hat that Lyons is wearing right now is the most comfortable Patriots hat for my big head.
So,
do you have a large head?
7 3/8 fitted, not like that big. But my philosophy on these hats is I only get a hat if the Patriots win the Super Bowl. And if they win the Super Bowl, then I choose between the Super Bowl hat and the conference championship hat, whichever one I like better. This is 2018. I like the conference championship hats much better than the Super Bowl ones.
So Awful Announcing does all sorts of polling on the favorite and least favorite media personalities.
Yeah, I think they've said that John Lyons and Jackson are their favorite EEI fill-in duo.
Oh, really?
I don't know. Yeah.
All the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine.
Grab bag!
So there have been tons of these different polls, and there's polls out there. Awful Announcing does them. I guess the NFL does some version of it, too. Rich Eisen has been named the worst announcer in football. And there was a whole lot of commentary all over social media about why Rich Eisen, who does games for NFL Network. So if you don't watch a lot of the international games, you probably didn't hear a lot of him until the Saturday games. Because then
you know
he was
I
in that spot.
You know what I think of with Rich Eisen is the Mac Jones interception in Germany game. Like, that's what I think of when I think of Rich Eisen.
Here's some of the comments that fans left about why he was named the worst announcer in football. Rich Eisen has to be the worst NFL announcer to be stuck listening to. He offers nothing remotely exciting, unique, or entertaining to any football game. I think Rich Eisen might be the worst play-by-play announcer in sports. Holy heck, is he atrocious. Watching the NFL on mute right now. I've never listened to worse broadcasters than Rich Eisen. Why is he calling national games? I got to be honest. Like, he just doesn't bring the juice.
No.
You want your announcer to be more over the top than under the top, which is kind of where Rich Eisen lives in, which is fine when you're doing a podcast. But the play-by-play, it's like, it's rough.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Oh. Do you have a large
grab bag?
That was a very good edit. Well done, guys. Next up, Celtics had a tough loss last night. Disappointing down the stretch. Quite a few turnovers against a team, the Portland Blazers, that had 21 at least turnovers when I was tuned in the fourth quarter in the game overall. But Jaylen Brown had 37 points. It's his ninth straight game with 30 or more points. What do you make of Jaylen Brown's season?
I think he's an MVP candidate, and it's not just the NBA MVP ladder. It's very similar to what I said about Drake May earlier. You look at the Celtics, you lose Tatum, Porzingis, Holiday, Horford, Cornett, like, what, five out of your top eight rotation guys from a championship team, and You're the three seed in the East. He's played. What's he averaging? 29.5 points a game. I didn't look at the numbers.
Well, I just said last nine straight games, 30 plus points.
Right. Exactly. So
he only sat one.
And he's playing like an MVP candidate. And it's been really awesome to see a guy that has been, I think, at times fairly, but a lot of times unfairly criticized in this town. And his relationship with Tatum has always been picked apart. This has been really cool as a Celtics fan for me to see.
Okay, let's move on to the next one, Jackson.
Jones and Keefe, grab bag. Jones and Keefe, Jones and Keefe, Jones and Keefe, grab bag. Jones and Keefe, grab bag. Jones and Keefe, Jones and Keefe, Jones and Keefe, grab bag.
Stephon Diggs made $500,000 extra dollars with a catch yesterday. I mean, one of his six receptions on six targets. He's got a few more incentives that he can reach, including 1,000 yards this season with the Week 18 game. It is a season where we get a lot of updates about, hey, this guy can get this bonus and that incentive and that bonus. Where do you stand on hearing about player incentives in weeks 17 and 18?
I think it's cool if the team can kind of make it work naturally. And what I mean is, like, I think Hunter Henry hit one yesterday with that little screen pass that he caught early in the second half. And you're up 35-3, whatever. You want to toss a guy a bone. That, I think, is really nice. The teams that, like, really go overboard and try to do it, especially in a close game, I think that's stupid. So if you can work it out naturally, I think that's great.
I agree. We got one more here, Jackson.
And she's watching him with those eyes. And she's loving with that
grab bag.
I just know it.
Okay, for our final little item here. On Monday morning today, Marcus Freeman informed two NFL franchises that he had been in communication with about their jobs, that he is staying at Notre Dame. Sources tell Sports Illustrated. So, Marcus Freeman staying at Notre Dame, does that surprise you that he's not making the jump to the NFL? And how do you think that changes, if it does at all, how it looked for Notre Dame to decide not to play in a bowl game?
Yeah, Marcus Freeman has done something that I thought was almost impossible. He's made me kind of like Notre Dame football, so I give him credit for that. And look, I found this interesting, like when Michigan had their job come open and people are like, what about Kalen DeBoer in Alabama? And I think sometimes people forget, like, how good of a job Alabama is and Notre Dame is. Like, those are better than some NFL jobs. If you think about, you get paid about the same, maybe a little less, but you have a lot of jobs secure. Like, Marcus Freeman could be there for 15 or 20 years if he wants to be. Kalen DeBoer, if he makes the college playoff once every 2 years or so, he'll be there for 10 or 15. These jobs, and there's a lot of pressure, don't get me wrong, but these jobs in some cases.
John Lyons.
What?
I'm from a Notre Dame family. They haven't won since I've been born.
But I think that's
like the championship. I'm not sure the pressure is that high.
Sick brag, bro.
But we saw, like, Brian Kelly get fired by LSU. Like some of these jobs do have a lot of pressure.
They do.
But they love
Marcus Freeman.
Exactly. Like, Marcus Freeman has a job that's more secure than any NFL job.
I definitely agree with that. Let's wrap that up there. That was our own attempt at grab bag. I know we didn't do all of your favorites, but that's why you need your regular guys in here, on top of many other reasons that you've probably gathered from listening to the show today. After this, we'll wrap up our show, and then we'll hand it over to the guys at WEEI Afternoons at 2 p.m.
The IRS finally caught up with Grab Bag.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Look at that. Like that sign out there on the highway said, road work continues, 42-10. Fellas, we talked about this. Unfinished business. Okay, I'm proud of you for the way that you came out. I'm proud of you for the way you kept your composure. You understand me? Okay, I know it's not easy out there. Okay, but I appreciate you for being the team that we are and believing in our identity, believing in each other. Okay, we're just, again, we still got some business to finish, But when they put us on the road, we started in Miami, we finished in New York. Okay, and it was a great team win and a lot of great efforts, and everybody helped us. Okay, but I'm glad we got number 10 pulling the trigger. So again, take care of our bodies. It's late in the season, fellas. The workouts, the conditioning, we have to have a mindset that there's a lot of work left. Okay, and what we've done, okay, is pretty special. But we got to keep thinking ahead. Okay, but I appreciate everything that you guys have done. Drake, break them down.
Hey, love you guys, man. Let's keep going, man. Let's keep going. Hey, pass on me. Pass on three. One, two, three.
That's what it sounded like following the Patriots win in the locker room yesterday. Drake May finally gets his game ball. Thank goodness. Everybody was like very worried all season. First, he had to get his 300-yard passing game. You got that. And then he had to get his game ball. So now he's all set. He's ready for the playoffs. Got to get through week 18. He's ready to win MVP. Any final takeaways from last night's game? We didn't get into the nitty gritty of it because honestly, the game sucked.
Game was pretty much over at that Jalen Hawkins interception.
Fun to watch guys score, but it was not a game that's worth, like, I would say, breaking down the all 22 X's and O's beyond whether you want to see if Armon Membu actually took a cheap shot at Christian Barmore.
Yeah, game was over at Jalen Hawkins interception, and then the Patriots went right down and scored. By the way, that catch on the sideline by Stephon Diggs, though, that was pretty impressive right after the Hawkins interception. So some fun moments in that game. And again, I think it comes down to one of the things we talked about last week and the week before. Can this team handle success and stay focused, right? We talked about this after that Buffalo Sunday night win. Could they follow it up? And they did. They beat New Orleans. They beat Tennessee. They beat Cleveland. So then you beat Baltimore. Good win on Sunday night. Clinch a playoff spot. Then you have Christmas this week. You have a bunch of guys out. Jets have guys out. And they kept their foot on the gas and they remain focusing. Again, the Jets are terrible. It was a blowout. But one of the signs of good teams, can you stay focused? Can you keep your foot on the gas? And they did, and that was impressive to me.
Yeah, I think that it kind of encapsulates what can be their bragging rights this season, is that anytime people talk, and myself included, because I sure have brought it up a lot today, about the easy schedule is, well, look what we did with it. We didn't have a single game in there where people looked at it and said outright, the Patriots should be favored by so much, they should crush this team, and they lost. And look, early on, you weren't favored heavily in a ton of games, but the only two games that were real bad losses, I'd say, would be the Raiders and, of course, the Steelers. This is very early in the season. You're figuring out who you were. All these games that were maybe branded as potential trap games, they just didn't fall for. And I do think that there's a level of intensity and focus with this team where that should make you bullish on the playoffs.
And that reminds me, and I know Vrabel's not part of the Belichick tree, I get, but
yeah, you could
that's
argue it.
Something that he took, like that's something those good Patriots teams we all remember, they didn't lose trap. They might have like one bad loss a year and that was it. Like they didn't really lose those quote unquote trap games. They would go up against a team they're better than and beat them by two or three touchdowns. So that's something that was kind of nice from a Vrabel coaching perspective. That was good because it harkened me back to those days where they were really good, because that was one of the parts of it. They would always beat the teams they should beat.
Yeah. In short, do you think that there's anything, as we look ahead, that Drake May can do that will be so transcendent in week 18 against Miami that'll really push him over the top of Matthew Stafford?
So I think it's more, honestly, Mego, about Stafford the next two games. Because he's at 40 touchdowns and May's at 30 and Stafford has two games. Like, again, if he finishes the next two games at 45 or more touchdown passes, I think he wins the MVP. If he finishes under, then I think May can win it. Now, if May throws five more touchdowns against Miami, it'll still only be 35. And I say still only in quotes, just comparing to Stafford. So honestly, I think it's more about Stafford. And if does he have a quiet couple weeks heading into the stat-wise, heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, you have a lot to root for on the horizon, or I should say like root against. If you want Drake May to win the MVP, root against Matthew Stafford. If you want the Patriots to have the number one seed in the AFC, root against the Broncos for sure, even though you may be preparing yourself to then also hate the Chargers because they could be marching into Foxborough. Before we leave, I do want to give a little quick shout out to some of the businesses on Custom House Wharf in Portland, Maine. We have a ton of listeners in Maine. And there was a terrible fire, a three-alarm fire, I believe, that area of the Old Port suffered on the 26th. And if you saw any of the videos on social media or on your local news, it was so lucky that they were able to contain it as much as they did. But there were some local businesses there. I might do a bad job butchering these. Seabags Factory Store, Nanku Kayaks and Maritime Antiques. These were businesses that are really hurting at a really important time of the year because of that fire. Again, very lucky that it was contained to what it was, but you guys are in our thoughts. And if you're in the local Portland, Maine area, anything that you can do to help them out. You guys know I love Portland, Maine. It's my second home. So shout out to everybody there. We're thinking of you. We love you guys.
It's a great city. I've been there several times. Wish them the best.
All right. With that, we hand it over to WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart and Fitzy. I do believe they'll have Drake May. So there'll be a lot of Drake May MVP talk for sure. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.